Welcome to Raising Playful Tots. Raising Playful Tots is a weekly podcast about mums making the most of early years playtime. I'm your host, Melissa. Welcome to the play space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids of ours. You have children under 5 years old? This is the podcast for you. Introduce a new play idea. Welcome to another episode of Raising Playful Tots. Glad you could stop by today. If you're new to the show, welcome. And hi, I'm waving over here to the regular playmates. Plenty of room in the garden here as we work on the butterfly garden. Last week's show, I shared an interview with Barbara Isaacs, Montessori trainer and director. She's an author from montessori.org.uk. So if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at www.raisingplayfultots.com/shows. This week's show, I'm talking to Amy Spiedal from Conscious Discipline. You know, it's hard to play when the children are just playing up. And what about our reaction to it all? We've all experienced the bad moods, the frustration, the tantrums, and what about handling sibling conflict? It's all part of raising a playful tot. Well, today, Amy's sharing some answers. I hope you'll stick around. If you enjoyed the show, please consider writing a review for us on iTunes or sharing this with your friends. Thanks. I'll be right back after this break.
Psst, Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Today I'm talking to Amy Spiedal from Conscious Discipline. She's been a teacher, director, parent educator and a life coach and comes with over 20 years of early childhood experience. Welcome to the show, Amy.
It's great to be on your show, Melissa.
I was introduced to Conscious Discipline through the incredible TED talk that Dr. Bailey did on wiring the brain for success. And I also remember an interview talking about her book, The I Love You Rituals. Can you tell us what is conscious discipline?
Yes, conscious discipline is based on the current brain research that lets us know that we are actually wiring children's brains based on how we respond. So it recognizes that children learn how to behave by watching how adults manage situations, which can feel a little scary at times, considering we don't always hit the mark. But we are models for how they work through their own negative feelings and handle a conflict. So for conflict situations and meltdowns, we see those as teaching opportunities rather than things that get in the way. And what we do want children to know and experience when the world doesn't go their way is what we're able to teach them during those moments. So if teaching's our focus, then over time children will learn what the appropriate tools are when they encounter upsets.
Brilliant. So conscious discipline is based on brain research and how it affects discipline. Could you tell us a little bit more about how that works?
There are three parts of the brain that we focus on in conscious discipline. The executive state, which houses all of our brilliance, It gives us all the answers to our problems. It allows us to think about how we're experiencing something. And the emotional state, which is how we interpret the feelings that we have around experiences. So it allows us to have our choices. So if you feel more inclined to have one product over another, or, you know, if you're doing one craft over another, it's your feelings that give you that experience. Our feelings also let us know when we don't like a situation and we try to avoid that. Then we have the survival state that we work from. So the survival state says whatever's happening right now doesn't work for me, so I'm going to go into a fight or flight response. So the way that we work with those in conscious discipline is to pay attention to what part of that brain is operating for the child. Are they in survival mode? Are they reacting to a situation? Are they in an emotional state? Are they having a strong feeling about something? Or are they in a part where they can actually learn and process? And so our job is to be more investigators and then to facilitate that child's ability to go from a survival state to an emotional state to a thoughtful ability to handle upsets. So it's a brilliant way of saying we are their coach in learning, recording for the brain, here's what you do when certain things happen. Here's how you handle it rather than just react to it.
Brilliant. And I think that the TED Talk that Dr. Bailey did on wiring the brain for success shows that really effectively as they move the people about on stage. So I'll have to link to that.
Excellent. Yeah, I love the brain aprons.
Yeah, they were really good. Really good. So let's get a little practical now. Can you explain what STAR means?
Sure. STAR is actually an acronym for SMILE. Take a deep breath and relax. And I would just say right now, for anybody who's listening, let's just do that all together. So smile,
okay.
Take a deep breath, and relax. And this is also based on the brain research. So what I just said about those three parts of the brain, when there's an emotional state that happens, when the heart rate goes up, because of anger or frustration especially. And have you ever had one of those moments, Melissa, where you're working with your child and all of a sudden you realize that your heart is pounding?
Yes.
Yeah. So any parent that can relate to this, sometimes it's just a, oh my gosh, here we go again kind of moment. So it isn't necessarily that anything's even gone poorly. It's just that you have a history of knowing that they're about to have a meltdown. So when your heart rate goes up, what's actually happening is that it's sending a message to the emotional state of your brain that says you're in trouble. And that emotional state is like an alarm bell at a fire station. It sends the message down to your survival state to say either fight or flight. It's just like, ah! So it sends out the fire trucks and wants to put out the big fire that's happening. And the problem with that is that in a conflict with a child, you want to be really thoughtful. You want to be able to help them problem solve, right?
Yes.
But when that happens, it shuts down the blood flow to that beautiful executive state that has all the answers. So the reason that we do smile, take a breath, and relax is to literally turn off the alarm system so that you can be in that executive state and problem solve. So when you push the muscles up on your face, it turns off the alarm bells because the muscles it takes to smile are not associated with fear, rage, or anger, which is what sends us into that tailspin.
Oh, wow.
So isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Just by pushing the muscles up. It's not about being happy. It's not about changing your state. It's about turning off the alarm bells. So once you push the muscles up, the brain relaxes a little bit, and then you take a deep breath, which gives you oxygen, and oxygen is brain food. And then when you relax your body, not only do you turn off any residual fight or flight, but you also signal to your child that they're not in danger.
Yes.
They get scared when we get angry. So when you relax your body, you let them know that we're going to be thoughtful about what to do next instead of reactive. Oh. Isn't that a powerful plan?
Yes, it is. It is. Because you get to kind of stop and really take a moment. And then you can really think a lot clearer. I've just had that experience. I've been practicing using that technique, and it just seems a lot better. You could see my children looking at my face, and you could see their way, like, what's going to happen next?
And right.
Like, okay, it's going to be calmer now. So
exactly.
It's been good. It's not long when you talk to parents about their play experiences before we can all relate a story about how we've been ready to play with our children. Perhaps we were just finishing something up, or we were actually preparing the game to play or the thing to do, and an incident happens where at the end of it all we're all just mad. It doesn't matter who started it, whether it's them or us, we're all just crazy mad. No one wants to play, and in many homes this happens a lot, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show today to talk about what we can do about this, because there are different times throughout the seasons of early childhood where this happens on and off, where you know, children are developing and we're trying to work with them, but it seems as if we just can't do it. So can you talk about timeouts and how we use those?
Sure. And timeouts have been so traditional, and especially when everything just gets crazy and it's like, okay, everybody to your rooms.
Yes.
And the problem with a timeout is that it actually doesn't help anybody learn how to do it differently the next time. So what you just described is so perfect, because it's kind of that thing of, oh my gosh, here we are again. But if you think about what did they learn when they go to, you know, everything goes crazy, they go to their room, everybody calms down, and then everybody kind of comes back. But what did they learn that says, here's how we could do it differently the next time?
Yeah, they don't.
That's rarely the step that gets invested. And yet, what we know is, if we're playing an instrument and we miss the notes, we practice so that we can get the notes right the next time, right?
Yes.
If we don't do well in math, we practice so that we can do it differently. If we have trouble on the sports team, then the coach takes us aside and we practice. What is it that we're going to do when we have the next game? But if the only time we ever get to actually have the experience is when we're in the moment, then it's unlikely that we're going to be successful. So what we want children to do is have opportunities to practice what is expected ahead of time. That's number one. So what's going to happen when it's time to shift gears? If they're watching a program and they don't want to turn off the set, you talk about that before you ever turn it on. And it might be hard. You might even want to feel so sad that you cry, or you get so frustrated and angry. And so we're going to take a deep breath. So when the tube gets turned off, we're going to take a deep breath and calm down our bodies so that we can handle this. So now I've rehearsed what it is that you can do when that moment comes, so that they've got at least some practical experience to say, here's how we can do it differently. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And would you do that? You would do that with very young children to model it, so that by the time that they're speaking well enough to be able to do that themselves, they'll have heard it so many times, would you say?
Absolutely. And the second piece is that we advocate, in conscious discipline, we advocate having a safe place. So it's a composure place, some place that you can go to have actual tools. And there are breathing techniques that are available on the website, consciousdiscipline.com. Under the resources, they have icons for breathing, including the star. But if you are unable to manage a frustration, it's nice to have a moment to compose so that you can come back and be more likely to problem solve. And that's true for parents as well as children. So, you know, you could put yourself into a place of saying, I'm just gonna take a moment, I'm gonna calm down, and I'll be back. And as long as you say to a young child, I'll be right back, then there's a good chance that they'll be able to understand that you're taking care of you, so that you'll be more likely to be able to take care of them.
Right.
When that happens, then we can be present right in the moment. So there's a lot of conflict that can be resolved in context, which is the most powerful learning tool. So when it starts to get frustrating, you take a deep breath and calm yourself down, and you say, wow, it seems like this is getting difficult right now. So if it's getting difficult, what do we need to do? Perhaps we could all just take a little break. We're all gonna just breathe and slow things down so that we can figure out what to do next. So that you're becoming helpful in that moment, providing the context of how one solves problems rather than the way we solve problems is yell and then send everybody to their room.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. And that again, then you rehearse what worked, what didn't work. And even with two-year-olds, when you're calm and you say, we can handle this problem, then they calm because they feed off of your heart rate. So if you're calm, they will learn to calm. If you get really agitated, there's no way for them to calm down. So a parent who's yelling, calm down, will never help their child calm down. It just never goes that way.
I think that's one of the ironies of parenting. When you overhear other parents saying these really odd things, and then you think, actually, I say the same thing.
I know.
Down.
My favorite is, stop yelling!
Yes. Exactly. No, there were really good practical tips there of practicing and actually putting these things into action, because normally, like you said, we just, you know, don't do that. We don't do it enough. Mm-hmm. We don't teach them. We don't show them how we can do that. Would you expect then that as you're doing it, that the first couple of times, if you have, let's take the incident of the television being turned off, if you've always turned it off and you've had the eruption of, no! and all of
yeah,
that,
right.
then the first couple of times when you try this newer method, that there'll be a little resistance and a little, it'll be a little difficult, but we should persevere.
Yes. And what we often say is that children learn 2,000 times in context. So it's a long road. This is not a sprint. This is a marathon. So we are teaching over time by believing that they're going to get it. You know, if we believed that children should stand up and walk across the room the very first time they ever try, then we will be very disappointed in their walking, right?
Yes.
So learning behaviors is the exact same thing. Learning how to manage your big, giant feelings is just such a big deal. And it is hard, and we all want what we want when we want it. So it's hard to deal with disappointment, and that's every time the world doesn't go their way, they're having to face disappointment. And I would say that even as adults, we don't like disappointment. We just learn to manage it better, at least most of us.
Yes. No, but that's good to know, because it can be frustrating when you think that you've been doing it for weeks and weeks and a lot of time, mm-hmm. and you just think, yeah, are they really listening? Are they really getting somewhere? Mm-hmm. But they do, and it's just keeping going. And even in the face, it seems of in them not telling you that they understand. I think we'll be amazed when they're elsewhere and we're not there, the things that come out of their mouth.
Exactly. Yes. They often show total strangers their better self before they reveal that they've learned it to us.
Yes. So how do we change behavior in our children?
Okay, so there's a couple of ways to begin that shift for children. And the first one is that we really want to pay attention to what we're focused on. So if we're focused on what we don't want, then it's very difficult for children to learn what is appropriate. So for instance, if we're saying don't push your sister, the problem with that is that all they hear is what is inappropriate, but not how do I handle it when she's getting too close, or how do I handle it when I feel like I don't have enough space. So what we want to focus on is what to do, and that's always the learning curve. We change behaviors by allowing them to practice what to do instead of what not to do. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so give me a scenario that you might experience where you find yourself saying don't or stop doing that.
Hitting your brother.
Okay, so, and my guess is that you say stop hitting your brother. Would you say?
Yes.
Stop hitting.
Yes.
So as soon as you use the word hit, in the brain, especially for young children, but this is also true for adults, as soon as we use the word hit, the brain looks for the action word, and it moves towards that. And then, without even realizing it, it replicates that action. So when we say don't hit, what we're actually doing is reinforcing the hitting.
Oh, wow.
And just as a little sideline, because I know this is a big deal with parents, whining is another thing that we often say. Stop whining. And not only are we using the word whining, we're usually whining when we say it. So we're totally reinforcing a behavior that we don't want. So instead of saying stop hitting or stop whining, we're going to tell them what we do want. So in hitting, you would say, you can say stop. And then you can say, it's important to be safe, and it's important to help your brother be safe. So you wanted to let him know something. you wanted to let him know that you needed more space, or you wanted to let him know that you didn't like when he did that. Here's how you can do that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're teaching, when it feels like this, here's what you can do that's more appropriate. Rather than stop feeling that way, don't do that.
Wow.
And then for whining, I'm just going to give you a very quick little line, because this is, I think this has saved lots of parents' lives. We tend to always say, stop whining, or use your inside voice, or do you use those kinds of phrases?
Yes, yes, I do. You've been
so
in my
we're going to focus on what we do want, but we're also going to give ourselves the understanding that we model what it is that we want more than the words that we're using. So that's why stop yelling usually has yelling involved in it. So what you're going to say is, match your voice to mine and try that again.
Oh, yes.
Isn't that
I
just
like that.
So fun?
Match your voice to mine and try that again.
Yeah, so whether it's whining or if you're in a place where they need to be very quiet, then you whisper, match your voice to mine, try that again, instead of saying you need to whisper. Because whisper doesn't really mean anything, but matching their voice to yours means a whole lot.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. I'm writing it down. Yes, brilliant.
So the long and short of this behavior shifting is, it's a marathon, not a sprint. It takes a long time. That the behavior that you see are just unskilled reactions. These are just children who are attempting to get their needs met in the realization that there are other people on the planet who are also doing the same.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of learning that goes into these young lives. And the more we can pay attention to the fact that this behavior just needs more skill. It needs more experience. And every time we stay focused on here's what you can do instead of don't do that, we deepen their learning skill.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Consequences can start to be put into place, but you really want to make sure that they've got the skill down, that they can actually activate a better plan in the moment, which takes a lot of practice, just like getting the soccer ball into the net. Actually, it's football in your country, isn't it?
Yes.
Getting the football into the net.
Yep. Oh, that's perfect. I was reading earlier about the importance of understanding how children think visually as opposed to verbally. Could you explain that a little bit more? Because I thought that was really interesting. You've alluded to it a bit earlier, I've noticed. So.
Yes, children think in pictures up to about the age of 7. In fact, I would say that probably we all think better in pictures. If you've ever done a craft, isn't it nice if there's a picture that goes along with it?
Yes.
Yeah, because then it makes more sense to you. If you're just reading the directions, it's hard to get a real view of where it is you're going. So the reason that pictures are so important to children is that they help their brain actually organize an event. So let's say that you want them to go in and brush their teeth. You can verbally tell them what to do, but all of the order gets convoluted in their brain. So they can't visualize it in their brain until they're visualizing it in their sight, in their vision. If you wanted them to be able to brush their teeth on their own, you would do a step-by-step picture to give them, here's how you put it on your toothbrush, here's how you put it in your mouth, here's how you rinse it under the water, here's how you spit into the sink, whatever those steps are.
Yes.
If I can look at this picture, then this picture, then this picture, I can follow those pictures and I can be successful in doing it. So the same is true with where you put things back in a playroom. What does it look like when it's on the shelf the way it's supposed to be? Instead of having to maintain a visual understanding of something from memory, because they don't have that ability to maintain that and to know how to proceed to make it look like that again. So what are the steps to clean up? What are the steps to a bedtime routine? What is it that I do first? What do I do next? What do I do next? And the more they can visualize that, the more their brain can organize. And the more the pictures are them doing it, so what I suggest you do is take pictures of them not while they're doing it, but pose it So have them pretend that they're brushing their teeth. That way they look delightful. And they think, I love brushing my teeth, instead of when you're trying to get them to do it and they look cranky.
Yes.
And then they get to put those pictures together and see. So then when you're, say you're sitting at the table and you're finishing up a meal, and you, and the next thing that they do is to brush their teeth, while they're at the table, they can have a little flip chart and you say, check and see what comes next. So then they flip to the next picture. Oh, look, when you're finished here, you'll go and brush your teeth. Now they have a primer that says, you know, they're priming the brain to say, here's what comes next.
You know, these ideas are really clever, because if you do this once, then it can last a long time. And then by the time they're seven or even earlier, they've just got it. And
right.
They're done. But if you don't do these types of things, then you find as if you're playing catch-up, and you just spend the next 2 or 3 years of your life constantly saying, have you done your teeth? Have you done your
right.
this? Have you done your that? And you just, you feel the independence doesn't come with them either. So it sounds as if you need to do a little work at the beginning, maybe taking the pictures, putting it in some sort of chart or flip photo book or album. But you get to use that quite frequently afterwards.
Right. When you think about the fact that, you know, when you're learning how to add, it seems like it takes forever to learn how to get addition down, subtraction down. But there's a point where you can do that in your head, lickety-split.
Yes.
But it takes a lot of practice before you get there. And in terms of just staying organized, I'm curious as to whether you write down what you're going to do each day. Do you do that?
Yes, I do.
And I'm wondering how many times perhaps in a day you actually look at it. Do you look at it several times, many times?
I don't. Once I've written it down, I know what I'm going to do next. But if I don't, then I get very confused with what I was planning on doing.
Okay. So once it's visually written down, then you hold that vision in your head, because
yes.
you know how to do that. Yeah. And some of us don't do that as well, so we keep looking at our daily planner over and over again. What was that? Maybe that's perhaps because I've gotten older. I have to do it more often. But we like having the visual reminders that we're on track. That's true for children as well. And for those parents who might be listening who already have 7 and 8-year-olds, it's never too late. You know, you can start wherever they're at. If they need help organizing, then they need help organizing. This, the organizational part of the executive state in the brain doesn't even start to come on board until about 4 years old. And it takes 24 years for it to really master all the skill sets. We're in this, like I said, this is a marathon. We're in it for quite a while in teaching those skills. But you're right. The more work we put in right up front, the more likely it is that we'll be able to get ourselves out of the picture and they can manage on their own.
Yeah, well, that's the plan. That's the plan.
Yep.
I think with the advent of the digital camera, it's made it a lot easier to be able to do these things so quickly and easily.
Yes.
To be able to annotate and put things all over your house if you want to, if you're that way inclined. And I know my three have really liked the picture cues for things. It's really worked well with them for organizing what they're doing and being a little bit more independent than having to ask me for the same answer over and over. They've got something to
right.
look at first before they come and say.
And that builds their self-esteem, that builds their self-regulation and their confidence around, wow, look at how capable I am.
Yes.
So that's beautiful that you do that.
I was really excited to hear when you were explaining that, you know, your voice was very controlled and you it was obviously a thought-through idea. And I think that this is one of the really hard things as parents. We're tired, we're busy, and, you know, we've got these children that we want to do things with and play with and do things with them, and we just get exasperated. So how would you encourage us to be able to, apart from using Star, which should be the probably the best thing to do, is to do
and Star is huge. I'm gonna reemphasize that, because unless your heart rate is low, you are going to react instead of be proactive. So
yes.
pay attention to yourself first. Take care of yourself first. That is absolutely essential.
Okay.
And then just in terms of having a break, of recognizing that sometimes it is a little overwhelming, I want you to think about two little phrases that will help you put into context what's happening in front of you. So when there's a conflict happening, just a very quick little message in your head, ask yourself, do I want to bring gas or water to this fire? So that will help you just have a perspective that says it will be better to help instead of be angry.
Right.
And we somehow, you know, and again, we've been conditioned for a very long time that somehow yelling feels like it works. So it feels as if getting angry is your right, and that now the kids are just going to change their whole tune and they're going to do exactly what they need to do. The problem is that very young children feed off of our emotions. So when we're angry, we can scare them, but we can't help them learn when we're angry. And for some children, when we get angry, they get angrier,
yes.
Which is really ugly.
Yes.
For those listeners who have children who get angry when they get angry at their child, you really want to watch that heart rate because they're just showing you that they're so scared that they're going to yell back at you. So gas or water, that will help you to say, do I want to help this child or do I just want to blame them for doing it wrong? And if I do feel like, oh my gosh, I just don't have it in me to be helpful, then take a break. Say, I'm just gonna go in the kitchen for a moment, or I'm going into the bathroom for a moment, wherever you need to go, and take care of yourself. Because again, what you have to offer them needs to come from a very deep place. And if you've been with them all day, if you're just exhausted, then give yourself a little break. And they'll manage for a moment while you step out of the room and then you come back and you can be refreshed just that little moment. Does that feel doable?
Yes, absolutely.
The second thing is that we can save ourselves a whole lot of work when we are focusing on what we do want. Because if we focus on what we don't want, we're just amplifying the same problem over and over again. So just by paying attention to, oh, I just said don't hit her, just be conscious to that. And then you can say, oh, here's what I really need to say to be helpful to you. You can say it, you know, you can be just very transparent for your child. Oh, that didn't seem like that was very helpful. Here's what I can say to be helpful instead.
Right.
And then another quick little fix is instead of I need for you to or I want you to remember that puts your needs in contrast to their needs. So instead, really use it's either time to or it's important to. Those are two really quick fixes in our language to give children clearer messages. So it's time to pick the toys up instead of I need for you to pick the toys up. It's time to get your pajamas on instead of I need for you to get your pajamas on. That will reduce some of the conflicts that you're feeling because as soon as they hear the word need, it brings up their needs. Well, I need to keep playing. I need to stay up late. So it's time to or it's important to. And then just another very little quick fix in terms of our behavior with children is to recognize that this behavior is happening because they're little, not because they're out to get you.
Yes.
So just to remember, they're little and they're learning.
Today I'm talking to Amy Spidell from ConsciousDiscipline.com. They have a huge amount of resources there for parents. It's full of tips, tools, printables, songs, and lots more over at their site, ConsciousDiscipline.com. Amy, how do we teach our children to deal with negative emotions like anger and frustration and their need for control?
That is a giant one, isn't it?
It is.
It's giant because we're still struggling with that as adults. How do we handle our feelings? There are two things that conscious discipline has done that are huge in the realm of feelings. One is Becky Bailey wrote a book called Managing Emotional Mayhem, which is just a giant inroad into understanding how feelings operate. And the second is a whole program with feeling buddies and songs around feelings so that we actually understand what these feelings are there to do. So in just a quick little nutshell piece, feelings have been relegated to the back seat as saying they get in the way, right?
Yes.
Our feelings get in the way of what we're actually trying to do. But if we think about what feelings are really there to do, they're vital to our well-being. So just like the senses, if we have the senses of touch, taste, hear, smell, those senses give us information about our external world. They tell us what our external world is about. Our feelings give us information about our internal world. They tell us how we're experiencing the world around us. what's working for us, what isn't working for us. So our feelings aren't the enemy. Our feelings are actually very, very important for the information they can provide. It's what we do with those feelings that then determines whether they can be helpful to us or whether they sabotage what comes next. So what we want to teach children about is that it is a feeling. So I first really suggest that anybody move away from language that says, you are angry. Now I am sad. It's not, we don't become the feeling, we experience the feeling. So the language we want to use around children and their feelings is, wow, it seems like you're feeling frustrated. It seems like you're feeling sad about that. It's a feeling that you have. It doesn't become you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because if the feeling becomes you, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yes.
You are now that feeling. Hi, I'm depressed. Who are you?
Yes. I'm mad.
Yes, exactly. So mad and depressed are now hanging out together. That's not a good scenario.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling this feeling. Now, what do I want to do about it? So the first thing that we want children to learn about their feelings is that they come. They're like weather. They come, they go, they show up at certain moments, and then we can figure out what we want to do about that. So we can, that's where the relaxation techniques come in, smile, take a breath and relax, or draining out all the frustration and then breathing in a calm so that you can solve your problem. If you're feeling sad, sad tells you seek comfort. So if you're feeling sad, getting a hug or sitting with a stuffed animal and just having a moment to yourself, that's a wise thing to do when you're feeling sad. And when you're and when that feeling passes, you can join us again. You can get back to the game. If you're feeling angry says seek a solution. So if you're feeling that way, what do you want to do about it? How do you problem solve that? But I have to be able to state I'm feeling this in order to know that there's some message that's coming with that feeling. And this is giant. So we're not going to be able to go through all of this on a call. But what you can do is really look up that resource, because this is life-changing. Being able to really help children with their feelings rather than say your feeling is getting in the way. Stop feeling that way.
Right. And the book was called Managing Emotional
Mayhem. Managing Emotional Mayhem. And okay. It is just a giant resource for all of us. It helps adults with understanding that if our feelings have been pushed to the side, we don't want feelings to rule us. We want feelings to just be the information they were intended to be, and then for us to still be in charge of that.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for at least starting us on that journey, pushing us in the right direction. That's really good. We'll definitely have to have you back on to be able to talk more about some of the other things that we can cover, because it's just such a huge area, this having for the children to be able to regulate themselves, the power of choices. There's so many things that we could talk about, but I just thought one last thing that we could look at would be some practical ideas that we can go off and look at. So book recommendations, things that we can actually share with our children about emotions and some of the things we've been talking about.
From the conscious discipline point of view, they have a whole series of books called Schubert books. And it's Schubert is a Star, which teaches all of the relaxation techniques, and Schubert's Helpful Day, which teaches how to use encouraging language, and Schubert Rants and Raves, which is about losing control and having big giant feelings take over. So there's a whole series of these books that would be great, not only because they're great to read to children, but also because they really help us as adults to hear that language over and over again. I'm guessing that all of us can repeat most of the words of Goodnight Moon by heart, because we've read it a bazillion times. So by reading these books to children, they also reinforce the language for us as adults. And for children, any book that you read or any little television show that you watch, the more you can dialogue about what was a helpful choice, what was a hurtful choice that children make in those shows, or in a book, wow, that seemed hurtful, what could he have done instead? So that you're getting them on that path of being able to see behaviors as having a choice component. So he chose to do this. What could he have chosen instead? So those things are ways for them to see how the world plays out. And then any kind of role play that you can do with children that say, how could we practice this so we can be more successful the next time, gives them a leg up in how to, go into a play situation or go into a store, any of those kinds of things. If it doesn't go well, instead of being absolutely aggravated by that, see it as more information for what could be put into place the next time.
Yes.
So you get back to the car, you're absolutely exasperated with your child, you take a deep breath and you say, well, that didn't go very well.
Yes.
So we're going to practice what we could do next time so that that will go better instead of, I'm never taking you to that store again. And you're
Yes. No, it's a complete change of the way in which we think. Mm-hmm. And controlling our reaction instead of just that visceral reaction of anger, but actually using what's happened and moving forward with it with a completely different direction. And I really, that's what I've really enjoyed about the Conscious Discipline books. We have the Schubert sets at home, and it's we really like to look at them together. I have a 9-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 3-year-old, and they all read them at different stages, but I really like the very back part, Mrs. Bookbinder's Bits of Wisdom, because you know, you read these books and you can kind of pick up most of the bits that we're supposed to pick up as parents, and the children, I think, get some of them too quite quickly. But certainly for my youngest two, having that back part really reinforced it for me to be able to see what I needed to home in on, and that was really helpful.
Oh, that's beautiful. And if I can just add for parents today, that instead of feeling like, oh my gosh, we've been doing it wrong, this is about it. This is just an upgrade. This is like saying we should have known to have laptops when we were teenagers. There weren't laptops when we were teenagers. We couldn't have had them.
Yes.
So we weren't wrong to not have them. It's just that they weren't around yet. And we couldn't have known how to speak to our children this way years ago, and our parents could not have known this, because this has really come about because of being able to see how the brain registers different signals and how the brain progresses in its learning. This is so new and so exciting. So this is like learning a new language. So if we want to learn Portuguese, we're going to have to learn it one word at a time until it becomes more fluid. But the beautiful thing is, as we learn it, it becomes our children's first language. And that is a very powerful reason to shift to better tools.
Brilliant. Today I've been talking to Amy Spidell from Conscious Discipline. She's been a teacher, director, parent educator, and life coach, and comes with over 20 years of early childhood experience. Learn more about strategies and tools by watching the 30-plus videos on YouTube if you subscribe to Loving Guidance. And don't forget to find all the information you need in one place at consciousdiscipline.com. Thanks for being on the show today, Amy.
It was my pleasure.
I'll be right back after this short break.
This is Zoe Toft of playingbythebook.net, and you're listening to Raising Playful Tots.
Welcome back to the show. I hope you've all had a great Easter break, or Passover break, or spring break. I mentioned a butterfly garden in the introduction, and I was referring to the amazing post by Sun Hats and Welly Boots about their butterfly garden. You can see in this post how the adults and children reused, planned, and made a butterfly garden in pictures. And you can find that post over at sunhatandwellyboots.com. And if you search for butterfly garden made with recycled materials, it's truly amazing. You can see, she's got tons and tons of pictures that are there so that you can see all stages of the making, the planning, the doing, and you can see the children actively taking part, which is always really heartening, because you know that children really can do this activity. This isn't going to be just a mummy daddy activity or a grandma or a granddad activity or uncle. You know that the children can be involved too. You can look through all these pictures and you can see the flowers that they've used. You can see the reclaimed things that they've found from other parts of their garden. You can think of it really, to me, it inspired me to think of things that I have in other people's homes that I can borrow and use. And you well know that you can make something like this for yourself in your own garden. So if you want to be inspired, go on over to her blog, sunhatandwellyboots.com, and have a look about making a sunflower garden. Then I meant a butterfly garden. This is the right time of year, I'm guessing, to be planning out these types of gardens and working on them. Gardening is going to be very interesting this year for those people that live in the south of England, as many of these people are already under a hosepipe ban and so can't freely just water new seedlings and plants. I think it's going to really change the way people plant and grow, especially down there. And it's not just the south of England. I know many states in America have this, and lots of places around the world. We have water limits as the summer draws on, and I think more and more countries are having this big, big problem with water, the amount of water that we use, not just for recreation, but for planting and agriculture and for feeding ourselves. How is it affecting you locally, wherever you live in the world? Are you still planning on planting your fruits, your vegetables, your flowers? Are you still planning on doing things with water outside, playing with water in the garden? Or has it changed the way you've had to do things? I would love to know what your thoughts are on that. You can contact us here by leaving a comment on Facebook, which would be Raising Playful Tots. You can also come to this post here for this show and leave a message, or you can email me. And all my contact details are on the website, raisingplayfultots.com. What are you doing for summer and water? If you have an activity to share, like I shared this week in the introduction about Sun Hat and Welly Boots and her butterfly garden, if you've got an idea like that that you would like to share, or you want to recommend a post or a play activity that you want to share, you can call that idea into the voicemail number on the website. Go on over to raisingplayfultots.com. And on the right side is a big blue button. You record straight from your browser and your recorded message is sent straight to me. In the news, I read an interesting report about effective preschool learning environments. It also highlighted some home learning environments. I wrote a post about this over at the Play Activities blog about some of the findings, which I hope will be really interesting, and some things that we can do now with this knowledge. If there's one thing that you can get out of each time you listen to this show, it's to go and try something new, because that will be the great news for our families. I'm excited that you took the time to listen to the show today, but that's just the first step. So come on now, trying and doing is the next thing. I can't promise that all the things that you've heard in today's show will work for your family, but you won't know until you try. Let us know how you get on, and if what you're learning here makes a difference as we raise our playful tots. If you've found out other things that have worked, if you've tweaked things, let us know. We're always on the lookout for good activities, good ideas, encouragement, and sharing of the things that make things work. All the links to the show, all the things we've talked about, the websites, the books, everything in today's show, you'll find by visiting raisingplayfultots.com/93. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 93. Come on over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye.